God, Father, Soul, I feel good. You're checking out my man, Mike Siegel. Hit it, buddy. Hit it, buddy. Hit it, buddy.
Good to have you with us. Another big hour. And actually, it's going to be another big 2 hours. You're going to be mesmerized. This will be entertaining and compelling, but it is about very important issues. And I think everybody out there is going to be maybe stunned by the conversation we're about to have with a very important guest. And it's good to have you with us. Back over the years, I have been disturbed by some of these evangelical preachers that get on television and raise money for their own well-being, Pat Robertson being one of them. I met a woman who had worked inside his home doing some remodeling, talking about the gold faucets, the mansion that he lives in, the opulence, and of course all of that derived from the public supporting his lifestyle. And Pat Robertson is still doing his 700 Club. And then we had Jim Baker and the PPL Club and the scandal and the fact that he took money from people for what was supposed to be a new life, and I think it was called the Heritage Club or something along those lines, where people would live at PTL in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we found out that he built people out of their money. He drove around in a Rolls Royce. He lived high on the hog. He lived, again, with great opulence. Paul Crouch, another televangelical individual who went through scandals and questions and investigations. But the one who is the most insidious, the most dangerous, the most duplicitous and hypocritical is a guy by the name of Jimmy Swaggart. Back in about 1988, started his temporary downfall because he was found to be involved with prostitutes, and here he had been preaching and preaching and preaching the Word of God, living the good life, living the virtuous life, something that he talked about but never did himself. Came back at him again in 1991. Finally, the Assemblies of God Church kicked him out. We don't want you here, Mr. Swaggart. And then he got up off the mat, and I suppose to his credit, from a business point of view, you have to admire the business acumen, probably mostly his wife, Frances Swaggart, and they started to recreate their empire and did turn it around. And I know that there were some journalists who covered that story back then and Swaggart's downfall, but what we don't know, many of us, is that he's had a turnaround and maybe very quietly has created another empire, still taking money from people, the public, in my view, under false pretenses, allegedly to run a ministry, but actually to run his own opulent life with his wife. They ought to call her Queen Swaggart. Be that as it may, we are joined by a guest who worked for Jimmy Swaggart Ministries in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Michelle McCumber, and has a great story to tell. Michelle, first of all, thank you for doing this. I know it's probably somewhat painful, but I appreciate you being on the program.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Let's go to it then and start talking about it. How did you wind up becoming involved as an employee of Jimmy Swaggart Ministries?
Well, actually, they contacted me. I was on Francis and Friends radio program because of a church that is rather cult-like that I had been involved in, and I was doing a lot of writing. I had my own blog, and I was contacted to be on that radio program, and consequently, they flew me down, interviewed me, and offered me a job, which I took. I didn't know too much about the Swaggarts other than what had happened in the 80s, but it was my understanding that he was repentant and that it was only a one-time thing, and so I felt, well, who am I to hold that against him? So I did take the job and move down.
All right, so now you got that position. Tell us about your own religious beliefs, if you will, to the degree you want to talk about them, and what you believe in your own spiritual life.
Well, you know, certainly I am a Christian, and probably not in the term that, or in the sense that North America views Christian, because basically I don't believe that most of our churches in North America really reflect, you know, the true and the real gospel. But, you know, I am a Christian, and I believe that it involves, you know, everything, heart, soul, and mind, and I believe that it's a heart and mind transformation.
Tell me what you mean by that. Does that how do the churches in North America not live up to the standard you're describing? What do you see them doing that falls short of what you're describing?
Well, you know, and we had discussed this just briefly off air a bit about that in the even with Jimmy Swaggart, it's say this little prayer and everything's fine. You can go on living your life, you can go on business as usual, and that's just not the case. And you know, a lot of the pastors in North America, you know, it's a vocation for them. It's, you know, it's not a calling per se, but more of a vocation, and you've got these people that are giving to support lavish lifestyles of pastors, and that's just should not be so.
All right, so in other words, let me use one example. Dr. Martin Luther King, somebody I had great admiration for, when he was assassinated, he had a grand total of $30,000 of assets that he left to his wife, which was minuscule, not very much money, but Dr. King was zealously committed to the message he presented religiously and to righting the wrongs in society that he believed were wrongs. And he lived, in my view, a consistent life in that regard. Would that fit more with what you're describing? Somebody who sacrificed
Absolutely.
And gave in that way and didn't self-aggrandize about it?
Yes, you know, absolutely. I think we've got this it backwards, because most of the churches in America, the pastors expect to be served instead of serving the people and serving, you know, the community. And you know, it's most churches are doing nothing. They're doing nothing for their own people or for anyone else in need. And I believe that, you know, faith without works is dead. And that, you know, if you say you belong to God, you're going to do the works of one who belongs to God.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because when you describe that about preachers, I could just put the word politician in there. You got the same result.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's really not much difference.
All right, so let's we have about a minute before breaking, so tell us a little bit about your initial impressions. You go to Jimmy Swaggart Ministries in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. When did you start working there?
I started working there in the very end of July in 2008.
And how long were you there?
For 3 years.
So you were there for 3 years, okay.
Yes.
And so you had a lot of time to watch and observe and participate.
Absolutely.
What was your initial sense, with about 1 minute before breaking, what was your initial sense about that ministry?
Well, you know, initially when I came down to the ministry, you know, they were on their best behavior because, you know, I was interviewing for a job. But immediately after moving here, I wondered, what on earth have I become involved in? Because there was so much secrecy. And to me, if you have nothing to hide, then you hide nothing. But there was more secrecy than you know, the corporations that I worked for, you know, in the secular world.
So therefore, what you had with Jimmy Swaggart was a question, why is this so controlled and so
yes.
tightly kept as a secret from the public and from the employees?
Yes.
We'll come right back, Michelle. Appreciate you being with us. Michelle McCumber is here, and she's a former employee of Jimmy Swaggart Ministries. We're going to expose Jimmy Swaggart for the fraud that he is. Mike Siegel here. Lots more coming, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. And welcome back in, folks. Mike Siegel here. Good to have you with us. We are joined by Michelle McCumber. She is here as a former employee of Jimmy Swaggart Ministries. and is here to tell us about what happens inside that organization that most would find stunning, incredible, amazing, and unacceptable. Michelle, let's get to it. Describe for us the business plan of Jimmy Swaggart Ministries, how they raise money through their television work and all of that sort of thing. The process of how they get their money would be the first place to start.
Well, a lot of their money fundraising is done on air, and I actually had a friend that did an analysis of hour by hour how many hours were spent fundraising as compared to how many hours were spent actually ministering the gospel. And the hours spent fundraising outweighed the hours spent ministering. So basically, he raises more money to buy more airtime, so that he can raise more money. That's how I see it. Now, he also does send out, letters and so forth asking for funds, but most of his fundraising is done on air and on their radio show.
And they also sell products like DVDs and CDs
absolutely, yeah. And they make a killing on these, because the product or the profit margin is so huge on these things. They sell a Bible for $80 US, and it costs around $14 to $15 to make that Bible. So you can do the math.
The one thing about that point that's very important is that they will do, correct me if I'm wrong, but they'll do what's called a Bible Fund, and what they'll promote for hours at a time is the idea that people will donate money to buy a Bible for somebody who can't afford it, for a preacher or for someone in need for a Bible, but they'll pay that full $80, as you said, and it costs Swaggart $14 to print it. So he's actually making $66, about 500% profit on selling the Bible, even though they present it on the air as being a gift of a Bible for somebody in need for a Bible. Isn't that a misrepresentation?
Absolutely. And it's interesting because he'll say, oh, we give Bibles to those people that are in need. No, they don't. What they do is they take donations from other people who are giving, $80 or however much and saying, okay, I want this money to go towards paying for a Bible for somebody that can't afford it. And that's, admirable. However, here's Swaggart saying, well, we're giving away all these Bibles. Well, no, they're not, because they match those requests for Bibles to the donors. And they never give away anything for free. Those Bibles are paid for. And not only that, instead of, paying, if somebody pays $80, that should buy several Bibles if you're considering them at cost. But no, that pays for one Bible. So, yeah, it's dishonest.
Yeah, in other words, that's right, because if you were to really do it from a benevolent point of view, Swaggart would say, donate $14 for a Bible, or give us $70 for five Bibles, and they'll get to the people. And then, because in effect, he's pretending that it's a gift from you and from the Swaggart Ministries, when in fact it's fraud, because he's keeping a ton of money out of every Bible sale.
That's correct.
Let's go to some of their personal lifestyle. Would it be fair to say that the donations they receive from people, whether it's in the form of people buying CDs or DVDs or donating for Bibles or just direct fundraising or just when Swaggart will be on stage and say, come up and bring us your tithing, that all of that money people believe is going to promulgate the ministry. Is that a fair point, that the people donating believe it's going to the ministry?
Well, yeah, I think so. I don't really think that anybody would give if they believed that the Swaggarts were living an opulent lifestyle, but they present themselves in such a way that they have given everything. And one of their favorite sayings is, give till it hurts. Well, why don't they give till it hurts?
Well, they don't even give when it doesn't hurt.
That's correct.
The reason I bring that up is because I want to get to specifically how they use this money donated by people who believe they're promulgating the Jimmy Swaggart ministry strictly for spreading the religious message that they can all believe in. Certainly we protect the First Amendment right to do that. But that's not what the money is used for. Let's start, first of all, about traveling. Donnie Swaggart, Jimmy Swaggart's son, apparently goes to various places to speak at churches and requires that he be put up at a four-star hotel, two meals a day in transportation, obviously flights back and forth. What about that?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so they make no bones about that. Now, the more interesting is their vehicles. Now, Swaggart has a son, Donnie Swaggart, a grandson, Gabriel Swaggart. And what's interesting about this, as you pointed out to me, Frances Swaggart, the wife who really runs things, basically, has a white Lexus sedan. Jimmy Swaggart has a berry-colored RX350 Lexus. Donnie Swaggart has a new CTS red Cadillac coupe. Gabriel Swaggart has a young fellow, the grandson of Jimmy Swaggart, has a GX460 Lexus SUV. And Jill, his wife, has a Jaguar for personal driving, as well as another SUV for driving around the ministry. Now, why do they need all these cars?
And the only thing that I can say about, you know, the Jag is that that is something that was told to me. I have not personally seen the Jag, but it was told to me by a very reliable source that she does, or she at least did.
And the other cars you've seen around?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay, so why would, if the public knew that they were donating money to Jimmy Swaggart, so for himself, his wife, his son, and grandson and grandson's wife all get, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 cars, how long would these people be donating?
Not long.
And that money comes directly out of the ministry, correct?
Well, I don't know. I can't, because I, you know, obviously I wasn't an accountant there, but it would be my understanding, yes.
Okay. Then you talk about the fact that they dine out every day, most of the time anyway, and at the expense of the ministry. And apparently there's a very fine, fashionable restaurant in Baton Rouge where they reside, and the menu will show that the entree itself is about $50 a piece, but no problem. The Swaggarts take their family, go dine there, and use ministry money to do that, correct?
Yes.
What's your thought about that?
Well, it's not right. Now, when anybody brings these things up to them or, you know, whatever, they always say, well, you know, Jimmy will say, well, you know, look, I've got all this music and, you know, really I should be a multimillionaire. Well, he is a multimillionaire, first of all. And if someone is to be believed who is a reliable source, he's more than a millionaire. He's a billionaire.
Well, that's an interesting point. We'll come back on that point, so stay right there, Michelle. And we'll continue along. We'll find out about, ladies and gentlemen, the alleged two-bedroom cottage that Jimmy Swaggart lives in. Two-bedroom cottage? Let's find out when we come back. Mike Siegel here. Michelle McCumber with us. Stay with us. Welcome back in, folks. Good to be here with all of you. Mike Siegel, as we get back to it. Michelle McCumber is with us. She spent about 3 years working at the Jimmy Swaggart Ministries in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And Mr. Swaggart has come under a microscopic look here and did back in the 80s and 90s, continues to get that microscopic look, and seems not to have changed his lifestyle very much in terms of living opulently, if you will. We turn now, after talking about all of the very fancy automobiles, using money from the ministry that people give in order to promote the ministry, not for them to buy Lexus automobiles or Cadillacs or Jaguars, to his two-bedroom cottage. Michelle McCumber is here. As I said, she worked there. Michelle, could you describe his two-bedroom cottage?
Well, his cottage is 9,337 square feet. So That should tell you that it's not really a cottage, and it is a two bedroom. But man, that bedroom must be a whopping huge bedroom.
Have you seen the home?
I have not seen the home. I've seen it from the outside, but I have not been in their home. Very, very, very few people get to see in their home. But I have heard it described by others that have worked in it. You know, they have different people from the ministry doing jobs around their home. They have a maid, obviously, and people that do their yard work. So I have heard it described.
Now, the Globe says it's $30 million, this property. Is that, does that sound right to you?
That sounds about right, because really he's on some of the most expensive real estate in the city, and he's got 20 landscaped acres, and it's not just his home on that compound. There's two other homes. There's his son, Donnie Swigert's home, and there's another home that I believe Frances' brother used to live in until he was fired from the ministry.
She fired her own brother.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's Frances Swigert, of course, Jimmy Swigert's wife. They have a grandson. Does he live on that estate as well?
No, I don't believe he does. And I'm not exactly sure. Obviously, he lives in Baton Rouge, but I'm not exactly sure where he lives or, you know, how opulent his lifestyle would be.
Now, March 14th, 1988, the Los Angeles Times wrote this. His meaning Swigert's, two-story high-columned parsonage, as it is called by ministry officials, sits behind a tall fence to assure privacy and is situated on 20 landscaped acres, including a swimming pool. The highly polished parquet living room floor is partly covered with an oriental carpet, and off the master bedroom is a step-up jacuzzi with faucets in the shape of golden swans. So that comes from the L.A. Times. And then the Globe, on March 15th, a day later, says, Jimmy Swigert and wife Frances, insiders say she calls the shots in their marriage and put herself in charge of damage control after the scandal broke. They say she masterminded her husband's tearful, teethy confession of moral failure. And they talk there about the $30 million estate. They talk about the 9,337 square feet. Now, they say they have a wooden brick security fence that Jimmy Swigert says was $250,000, but apparently it's similar to what lords and royalty use in England, and it's about actually $750,000 for that security fence. Is that right?
I've heard that, yes. Reliable sources.
And then Jerry Lee Lewis, a whole lot of shaking going on, Great Balls of Fire, and all the High School Confidential. In fact, I saw Jerry Lee Lewis at a concert. I don't want to date myself here, but I saw him years ago do a concert. He happens to be Jimmy Lee Swigert's cousin. And the story goes that Jerry Lee Lewis asked his cousin Jimmy Lee Swigert, why did you build such a home? Jimmy Lee Swigert says, what Frances wants, Frances gets. And that, of course, Frances Swigert, his wife. She apparently runs things. I said to you off the air, it sounds like, and tell me if this is a good analogy, it sounds like the way Bill and Hillary Clinton operate with each other. He does all the nasty stuff, and she has to protect the privacy of what he does, trying to bail him out. Does that sound similar?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a very good analogy. Very correct. She runs that ministry, and everything goes through her. It's not Jimmy's word; it's Frances' word that counts for anything. And she's very unreasonable. She's hard to get along with. She fires people at the drop of the hat. She's probably, and I hesitate to say this, but I've never actually said about someone that I literally felt evil in their presence, but she is one person that I would definitely say that is true.
That she has evil in her.
It feels like that. I've never actually sat before someone and literally felt palpable fear, but every time I was in front of Frances, even if it was a friendly conversation in her office, I did work with them quite in depth because I was the webmaster, so I dealt with Frances quite extensively during the first bit of my time there, and whenever I would be in her office and, you know, that was quite frequently, I would feel fear, even if it was a friendly conversation. I have never experienced that in my entire life with anyone. I literally could feel it was a palpable fear.
That's fascinating. Can you describe what you might fear? What would it be? Some sort of...
I, see, that's the thing, because I would be reasoning in my mind. I thought, okay, they think I'm doing a good job. I don't think I'm in fear of my job. I don't know. But I have heard this described over and over and over by other people.
So that's a common feeling about her that she's...
Oh, the employees are terrified of her. I mean, literally terrified.
Why do people work there, do you think?
That's a good question. You know, when I first got there, I noticed, first of all, I noticed the secrecy. But second of all, I noticed the way the employees behaved, and it was like they were browbeat. There was no joy there. In fact, they called the main administrative building, people would refer to it as the mausoleum, because you would go there and literally you would feel like every ounce of joy would be sucked out of your body. There was just an overwhelming sense of oppression or fear or something, and the employees were all afraid of Francis. And literally, I mean, even during the services, you'd be in the service and she'd be up at the front and she'd sit there and sometimes be writing things down, and she would literally be looking at which one of her employees were in the service.
So in other words, if you weren't there, you had a problem.
Yeah. I stopped going to church there after not long, because I saw that it was a sham, and to me, I like my soul was not for sale. You know, in terms of, you know, I wasn't going to exchange my soul for a job, and I just didn't want to go there and go through that sham, because that's what it was. And I stopped going, and I was castigated on more than one occasion regarding not going to church. And that was never made a condition of my employment there.
So she noticed that you wouldn't come to the service that they would run. How often do they, when you were there, how often did they run services?
They have a service on Wednesday night, and then they have two services on Sunday.
So really, during the week, there's a lot of not much going on.
Not really. There's prayer on Tuesdays, you know, during the lunch hour, which, you know, is nothing much. I mean, they didn't really require people to go to that, but you were required to go to church. And, you know, the odd thing was is that the rules there seem to be selectively applied. And I think that that's what added to that sense of almost terror in the employees, because the rules kept changing, and there seemed to be two sets of rules. So you never really knew if you were okay, you know, or not. And, for example, she was upset that I was not coming to church. However, there were members of her own family not going to church that worked there.
And that was okay, so, but in your case, it wasn't.
Right.
Let me ask you to stay right there. There's a lot more we have to get into, and we'll do that, and we'll do that during this hour and the next hour as well, because we're only getting started here, folks. Jimmy Swaggart has a whole bunch of stuff going on that would make you cringe. Stay with us. Welcome back in, folks. Mike Siegel here. As we continue the conversation, we're talking about Jimmy Swaggart, a flashpoint, if you will, for abuse of people who are in need, who are weak, who are looking for strength, and in return for a price, I guess he gives them a feeling of comfort. Michelle McCumber is here. She was an employee at Jimmy Swaggart Ministries in Baton Rouge, Louisiana for 3 years. And we're delighted to have her with us on the program. Michelle, you were talking about Francis Swaggart pretty much running things. A newspaper piece pointed out, they say this, they predict that she'll pull out all the stops to preserve the Swaggart empire and the luxury that goes with it, like the his and hers Lincoln Town cars, the extensive wardrobe, the jewelry, the multi-million-dollar home, even the golf course retreat 15 miles outside Palm Springs, California, purchased by the ministry for $280,000 in 1986. So they used money donated to the ministry for Swaggart to buy a vacation home in Palm Springs.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the vacation home, it's interesting because whenever you or anyone confronts the Swaggarts over things like that, they'll always say, well, it was a gift. But it's interesting during the John Camp investigation that they claimed that the cards were gifts. But he actually proved that that was not the case. And so they lie. And so I think that they would probably say, oh, that was a gift. But, you know, what they say and the reality of the situation is oft, if, you know, if not always, not the same.
Yeah, well, actually, I remember of my own recollection, probably around 88, when all that story broke about his involvement with prostitutes, he was wearing a Rolex presidential watch, $20,000 watch, and he called it a gift from someone. His explanation was, oh, it was a gift. You could see it on his hand, and I saw it when he was doing his thing on stage, and it was actually what he described to be a gift. And I guess if you want to say that people donated money so that he could support himself in a manner to which he became accustomed, then I guess you could say that it was a gift from the donors to the ministry. But aren't a lot of those donors, at least in terms of your experience, what you saw, what seemed to me at least, they would be very weak in their self-image, going through problems in life, and they're trying to buy their way into maybe heaven or maybe the good graces of religion, in effect, through Jimmy Swaggart. Does that resonate with you at all?
Not really. That may be true for a portion, but that's certainly not the case. I know, you know, one large donor in particular that has since come out against Jimmy Swaggart, and that was certainly not the case with this person. They had a very strong faith and really, you know, loved the Lord, but they were suckered in. They believed the image that they saw and literally picked up and moved to this area to be closer to the ministry. And of course, once they saw the ministry up close, it was quite evident that, you know, what was projected was not reality. And they became disillusioned. But, no, I don't believe that that's the case in every situation.
No, I didn't mean everyone, but maybe dominant.
That's probably abortion, yes.
The only reason I bring it up is because he'll talk about people with alcohol problems, drug addiction problems, smoking problems. In other words, he tries to appeal to people who have certain kinds of problems that I guess he would consider to be sins, and therefore he's saving them, and therefore if you've got any of those problems, give me money and you're saved.
That may be in the thought processes of some. I don't know. Certainly not in anyone that I personally know, but, you know, that could be so. I think, you know, I know of one situation of a very wealthy widow, and I found this from one of the archives. I went through a lot of the archives and news magazines and so forth, you know, once I left the ministry because I really wanted to get a grasp on what I had just experienced. And I came across this article about a very, and I think her name, if I'm not mistaken, was Zoe Vance, but she was very, very wealthy and actually ended up giving the ministry real estate and everything else. But, you know, Swaggart literally would court people like that. And, you know, here she was. She was elderly. She was, you know, getting close to her time to pass on. And I think that for someone like that, I think he courted her to make her feel that she needed to give this money to further the gospel and so forth. And I think it played on that, you know, and I see that quite a bit.
Let me also just quickly go through some of the other specifics of the opulence of the Swaggarts. Frequent vacations, always out of town. They take their son Donnie, their grandson Gabe, and his family as well, multiple times during the year. They've got a membership in the Country Club of Louisiana, which costs $45,000 a year. And that's across the street from where they live, by the way. In the 1980s, Francis Swaggart bought a desk costing the ministry and the money that people donate over $11,000 for one desk. And then she redesigned their swimming pool at the donor's expense, had it redug and redesigned because she wanted a different shape. And then a few years ago, there were oak trees on their property, but she wanted palm trees. So they spent tens of thousands of dollars from the ministry, she and her husband Jimmy Swaggart, to replace the oak trees and put these palm trees on the property. They like palm trees, so they had to do that. By the way, both of them have had many plastic surgeries. Is that correct? And I assume that's at the expense of the donors as well.
Yeah, they've had many plastic surgeries, especially Francis. But if you actually look at some of the pictures, and you could, you know, you can Google that, do an image Google search. There was actually an article back, I think that was in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe early 90s, that claimed that at that time, Francis had already had 5 procedures done. And I know that during the time I was there, she had several procedures done. It's evident. And I don't have any, problem with how somebody spends their personal money. That's not an issue. It's not the fact of the plastic surgery. It's the fact that, is this coming from donor money?
That's my point. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Somebody earns money on their own. If he writes a book and it's a New York Times bestseller, then God bless you. Go ahead and do what you want. But they're taking donations from people who think it's going to help the ministry. And it's actually doing facelifts for Francis Swaggart.
And I think, you know, people are giving this money thinking it's going to further the gospel. And, you know, they're listening to the Swaggart saying, oh, we've given everything and we give till it hurts. No, they don't. They expect everyone else to give up their grocery money and whatever, but, they certainly do not.
That's a very good point. They don't really, there's no benevolence in the Swaggarts. You talk about a pair of slacks Francis Swaggart bought costing $850, paid for by the ministry. Donnie, their son, buys a brand of sock that costs $30 a pair. I mean, I guess it's probably Hanro from Switzerland, but that's a pair of socks costing $30 a pair. Again, all of this out of the ministry. Francis buys Louis Vuitton purses, gives them as gifts, and apparently Jimmy Swaggart's secretary got one of those. Bought by Frances Swaggart, and she apparently wanted to make sure that the woman knew it was real, right?
Yeah, because that woman was me.
She gave you? Okay.
It was me, yes, and I commented on the handbag because it was a beautiful handbag, and, she said, made sure that I knew that it was real, and I mean, it was pretty evident that it was real. But I found that very interesting, and it had been a gift from Frances.
Now, the other thing is, the ministry has many toll-free lines, which are used only for purchasing DVDs or CDs, books, other materials, and for giving donations. But if you want a prayer, they only have 2 lines, and those are not toll-free. You have to pay for the call. Am I right?
Yeah, isn't that something? You know, here they are, you know, claiming that they are so concerned about getting the gospel out and wanting to raise all this money for the gospel, and they're more than able to have the toll-free numbers if you're going to call in and you're going to give them a donation or you're going to buy a Bible from them or a CD or a book. But if you need prayer, if you actually have a need for a prayer or want someone to pray with you, you're going to have to pay for that out of your own pocket.
And the final point in this segment is that they use the nonprofit equipment, meaning that they buy equipment for the church, but then they use it for the ministry, which is a profit-making organization, in order to sell their books and CDs and all of that. And they basically use it in a way they are not supposed to. Is that correct?
I would say that that's correct, yes.
Okay. Michelle, if you can stay right there, we have a news break, and we'll come back and continue along with the conversation. Is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay, great. Michelle McCumber is here. Mike Siegel with you. We have another big hour telling the truth about one Mr. Jimmy Swaggart. Jimmy Lee Swaggart misrepresents himself. Stay with us.